communication of information by, in, to, or through this show, and your receipt or use of it, one, is not provided in the course of and does not create or constitute an attorney-client relationship. Two, is not intended as a solicitation. Three, is not intended to convey or constitute legal advice. And four, is not a substitute for obtaining legal advice from a qualified attorney. You should not act upon any such information without first seeking qualified professional counsel on your specific matter. The hiring of an attorney is an important decision that should not be based solely upon show communication.
WKCS Falcon Radio now presents In Session, a presentation of the Public Affairs Department of WKCS. This program provides educational information about different areas of law and features Knoxville lawyer and Fulton graduate Jed McKean. If you have any questions about today's show, they can be emailed to wkcs@knoxschools.org or insessionradio@gmail.com. Now, let's go in session.
Welcome to another year of In Session. I'm Tito Menefee, here with Lucas Hill and Jed McKean.
All right, today we are going to be talking about landlord-tenant relationships and the eviction process. So, what exactly is the eviction process? When does it come into play? Who does it involve? These are things that almost everybody will have some part of in their life, but they don't understand it very well. A landlord is somebody who owns a piece of property generally that they don't live in, and they are wanting to rent it out, like a house that they own. They live somewhere else, but they own a house. Say they had a relative die and they inherited a house and they want to rent it out to make money. Well, what they will do is they will find a tenant or a renter to rent that house out from them so that they could make money on that house. So, how does that relationship come into play? So we have a landlord and they have a property and they think, okay, I'd like to make some money off this. I'd like to rent this house out. How do I do that? Well, the first thing they need to do is make sure that the house is livable, that the toilets work, the water runs, that the roof keeps out rain, that there's good insulation in the house, all these different kinds of things to make sure that the house is livable. Then, once they have got the house livable, what they will do is they will try to find a tenant. Now, does either one of you know what a tenant is?
A tenant is someone that's living in there?
Someone who will potentially live in the house. That's correct. And so how do they find a tenant, or how do they find one who's good? Because I can say, sure, I want to live in this mansion that's $10,000 a month, but I can't afford it. So what the landlord will do is they will list their house for rent. Now, what are some ways that you could list a house for rent?
I know somewhere like they put it in front of the house or something like that.
That's a good answer. What are some other ways that you could show a house for rent?
There's also some on websites, I believe.
That's right. You could list it on Craigslist, or you could just talk to people that you know and say, "Hey, I've got a house for rent. Do you at church or at, you know, wherever the case may be, at your work, to see if there's anybody you know who would want to rent it out." And usually you would take pictures and show these pictures. So a tenant, say like Tito said, there is a sign in the yard with a phone number on it. The tenant calls the number and wants to rent out the house. Well, they would go to the house. The landlord would open it up and show it around to them. They may talk about whether what the utility bills run, whether there's a washer and dryer included, if they allow pets. All of those kind of conversations happen on the front end. And I actually have properties myself, which I rent out. I'm supposed to meet someone this afternoon. Now, my deal is I don't allow pets because I had a bad experience of cats peeing everywhere in the house. But that's one thing that needs to be discussed on the front end. So what would the landlord need to know? What's some things that the landlord would need to know about the tenant before they are willing to rent to them? What would be important, do you think?
I guess their lifestyle, like if they have pets or how much they can afford rent each month and
those are good answers, Lucas. Tito, you got any thoughts other than like how much, you know, how much they make is important. Do you think smoking, that's a big deal?
That's what I was about to just say. Too.
Yeah, because, you know, some people don't want their house to smell like smoke. Some people don't care. But for me, it's become such a big deal now for smoking that I say, look, I appreciate the fact that you can smoke if you want, but just not at my properties, okay? And I don't allow any pets anymore because I had a bad experience. And I want to make sure they can afford the house. If the rent for a house is $700 a month and they only make $800 a month, they're not going to be able to afford that house because they won't be able to pay any of their other bills. How do you find out that information? Through an application. And for me, that's usually a one-page or two-page document, which the tenant fills out, and the landlord will look at it to see how much they can pay in rent. Another thing that it becomes important for a landlord is whether the tenant has a bank account. If they don't have a bank account, that kind of worries people that this person's not responsible, that they can't keep money on them, that they only deal in cash, which can be worrisome to some people, okay? So after they take this application, they say, okay, it looks good. What do you all think would be the next step after a landlord gets an application from a tenant? The tenant looks like somebody that they want to rent to. What's the next step?
Would it be to take a background check?
That's a good guess. That would be an excellent thing to do. Maybe this person has a criminal history of theft or something like that. That would be something that would be important. Now, it costs the landlord $25 to $50 to run a background check, but it could be important. What's another thing that you could do after you have received the application and it's somebody you want to rent to? What would be the next step towards starting a relationship?
As in something like if something goes wrong with the house or something like that?
That would be one thing that you could discuss, but you would probably want to talk about signing a lease or a contract. Say, okay, I think that I want to rent to you. You look normal. You don't have any tattoos on your face or anything like that. I think I'm going to rent to you. So what they would do is they would have a contract or a lease that would be just a few pieces of paper with terms on it that they would sign that would say the terms. And how long? Does either of you know how long a normal lease is for a residence?
I want to say 3 years.
Good guess. What do you say, Lucas?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, it's good that we're talking about this then. It's a typical residential lease is for 1 year or 12 months, okay? Sometimes they're shorter. They're almost never longer than that. If it was a business, sometimes they can be 3 to 5 years like what you were talking about. But for a residence, usually only 1 year, okay? So what they have is a contract that says for the next year, you will pay me $1,000 a month, and in exchange, I will let you live at the house that I own, okay? So they have that, and in exchange, when they sign that lease, both people get a copy. So there's two copies. One person, one goes to the landlord, one goes to the tenant. The tenant will also bring money for the first month's rent, okay? Let's make it easy. Let's say you rent it for $500 a month, which is very cheap. Usually in Knoxville, you're looking at a minimum of probably $600 a month for rent. I see, you know, in fancy parts of West Knoxville, you may be looking at $2,000 or $3,000 a month for rent or downtown. It just depends on where you live. So they bring the money for the first month's rent. They will also need to bring money for a security deposit. Now, does either of you know what money for a security deposit is?
Would that be, like, I think if, like, say if someone breaks in your house or, yeah, I guess, takes your belongings and you have the extra money in the bank to replace it?
That's a good guess, Tito. Do you have an idea?
I do not.
Okay. So a security deposit means that if when the lease is over, say after a year, you'll rent for me and then you find another place to live. And usually the security deposit is the same amount as 1 month's rent. So you've paid me $1,000 when you moved in. $500 for rent, $500 for security deposit. If when you all move out, you said, hey, Jed, we did, you know, had a great time living here. Time for us to go away. Oh, and by the way, the door is broken also. We got a little crazy. We were wrestling one night and we broke a door. Okay, so it's $100 to replace that door. That security deposit money will come out of, to replace the door, will come out of the security deposit. So I will get $100 out of your security to replace that door, and then you would get the rest back if everything else is okay. So it's in case anything breaks at the house, I'm protected by that money that you've already given me to protect anything that you'll break. It may be accidentally. One time, I had a boyfriend and girlfriend get in a fight at my house. She broke every single window in my house because he broke up with her because he caught her cheating. And he's like, well, she's got to pay for all that stuff. I said, oh, no. Your security deposit, and it wasn't enough to cover all of them, is covering as many of these windows as there are that it will cover. And then he owed me still money on top of that because of all the windows that were broken. So that's one example of what a security deposit would cover. Okay, so let's go back. We've signed the lease. You all have given me a first month's rent and a security deposit. You've got a copy of the lease, and I've got a copy of the lease. What else would I give you? Well, I would give you the keys to the house. Okay, so before that, you all don't have any access to the property. Now the property is yours to use. At that point, I'm supposed to leave you alone and not come on the property unless it's an emergency. You have a lot of landlords who are not good at this. I get phone calls all the time from people saying, hey, my landlord came in my house last night and just walked around and looked at things and then left, and they do it once a week. That's a big no-no. They're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be able to use that property however you see fit because you all have signed a lease and pay rent to live there. So landlords do that, and they're not supposed to quite often. Now, I'm supposed to keep a key in case there's an emergency or the power goes out. Now, let's talk about the power. You all are supposed to get the utilities placed in your name. I'm not responsible for those unless we agree to that ahead of time. You all have to call KUB and get the water and the utilities in your all's name. So that's another thing that you all are responsible for.
All right, well, let's take a break. We'll be right back with In Session with Jed McKeon.
This is Falcon Radio 91.1 WKCS Knoxville, a service of Fulcom, the Fulton High School School of Communication.
If there were a vaccine against cancer, wouldn't you get it for your kids? My name is Rhonda. I'm a mom and a survivor of cervical cancer caused by HPV. I know how important HPV vaccination is for cancer prevention. That's why I made sure my daughters got vaccinated. You can protect your kids too. Talk to a doctor or pharmacist today about vaccinating your sons and daughters against HPV. Every time your teen or preteen visits a clinic or pharmacy, it's an opportunity to start the HPV vaccine series. Have your child vaccinated. If you can prevent this for your child, please do so.
Falcon Radio.
All right, welcome back here with In Session with Jed McKeon.
So today we're talking about landlord-tenant relationships, and we've walked through what those roles are, the application process, getting a house ready to rent, and now we're going to talk about the relationship after the landlord said, okay, tenant, I'm going to rent to you. You've moved into the property. I've given it to you. How does that relationship continue down the line? Now, the tenant will owe the landlord rent on the first of every month. After they pay the money and move in, they will owe the rent on the first of every month for the next 11 months. Does that money have to be paid on the first of the month? Not necessarily. The Tennessee law says that you have until the fifth of the month to pay that rent without it being considered late. Now, if it gets to the sixth and the rent hasn't been paid, then there's the possibility for the landlord to evict the tenant for failure to pay rent. Okay? Sounds pretty tough if it's the sixth of the month they haven't paid, but that's what the law says, and these landlords are saying, hey, you know, you were supposed to pay me on the first, it's the sixth now, you haven't paid me, I'm going to evict you. The other option is if they accept money after the fifth, there is a late fee, usually 10% of the amount that hasn't been paid. So if rent is $500 a month and you haven't paid by the 6th, I can say, okay, I'm going to accept your money, but I'm also going to charge you a 10% late fee. So now you owe me $550, which is kind of nice for a landlord. If somebody pays late regularly, they get extra money every single month. If somebody's paying late, an extra 10%. So how does somebody pay rent to a landlord? Let's think about this practically. Do you guys have any ideas as to how would a tenant get money to a landlord to pay them the rent?
My dad, he used to just go to the landlord's house and give it to him face-to-face. Or could you
mail it to him?
Yeah.
Those are both excellent. And that's what happens. The two items you guys have said is what happens in almost all of the cases. They either pay it to them in person or they mail it in, okay? Sometimes that can be a little difficult if someone's dishonest. They say, well, the check is in the mail. What does that mean? You know, it could mean anything. What I have for my properties is I have a bank account set up at my bank that says, look, you're not going to meet me. You're not going to come to my house. I'm not going to meet you at the gas station and get the money. You're going to go to the bank when it's owed and deposit it into that account. So that's another way. But you're right. Mailing it in and paying it in person are the two most common ways to pay the rent. Okay. So if you all are paying me the rent on time, you're renting for me, you're paying rent on time, and we're in the lease, there is really not any reason for you all and I to interact. You're not going to call me and say, hey, can we pay you more rent? Or, hey, just wanted to tell you how awesome this property is. And I'm not going to call you and say, hey, I'm going to take money off your rent because you're doing such a great job. Those conversations won't ever happen. I promise you that, okay? Those won't happen. They will only interact when something goes wrong. Give me an example of something that would go wrong on a property.
Say what, like you said, the window's breaking, and I guess if they want to move out or something like that.
Those are good examples. You got any ideas, Lucas?
If the paint's peeling off the walls, repaint it. In some scenarios, if you can't get to it, mow your yard in time, and they're around the neighborhood and see if they can mow it for you.
That's good. Those are good examples. Now, what would be an example of if a landlord needs to contact a tenant because something is wrong? What's the number one reason?
If they're late on their money.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So usually they will only have those conversations when something's wrong. Now, typically, when a tenant says, hey, something's wrong with my property, the law says in Tennessee, the landlord has to keep the property safe and habitable. What does that mean? That could mean anything, really. It's up for interpretation. But I would say, you know, if it gets cold outside and the heat doesn't work, that's not safe and habitable. You can't live in a house that's 20 degrees, okay? Or in Tennessee, it gets pretty hot. What if the air conditioning doesn't work? In my opinion, that's not habitable if the air conditioning doesn't work. Obviously, if there's leaks in the roof, that's not habitable, okay? And of course, if the rent is late, that's something that would need to be addressed by the tenant. And there's nothing that will get landlords more worked up than people not paying their rent, okay? You know, you think, okay, they're paying their KUB bill, they're filling their car up with gas, but they're not paying their rent. It gets landlords worked up. That gets me worked up. So we are getting to the point now where we've talked about what the relationship is, how it starts, and hopefully if the relationship is going well, that's all that happens. The tenant pays their rent. If there's something wrong, the landlord comes out and fixes it and makes it safe and habitable. But the eviction process, and what we will talk about almost all next time, is what happens when something does go wrong. What if the tenant doesn't pay that rent? What if the landlord won't fix the property and the tenant wants out of the property? Where does that relationship start? Well, it normally starts with the landlord, if they aren't getting paid, evicting the tenant. So there's some specific language that the law allows you to put in your lease that says, if you don't pay for rent, then I can evict you on the 6th. Just file the paperwork. Now, what does that look like? What is it? It is one piece of paper that is folded over three times. It's called a detainer warrant. It's a fancy word for an eviction. And it gives you about three lines in one block to say why you're evicting them. That's it. It's one piece of paper. That's all the judge will see. It's not something long. And the landlord will need to get that served upon the defendant or the tenant so that they can evict them, and they will come to court. In Knox County, all evictions happen on Tuesday mornings down in the old courthouse downtown, okay? 9 a.m. Don't wear shorts. They won't let you in the courtroom, okay? See, so many people not get to go into the courtroom because they come to court with shorts. I don't know why they would do that. So that is kind of how the process starts. And we will talk much more about that, the timelines and the deadlines, about what goes on in that process when we come back next time. But that's how those are the leading up to how we get there. Now, questions about what we've talked about so far.
Going back to when rent's due, either the first or fifth, what if it's paid in between those days?
Okay, so that's a good question, and that's perfectly fine. If you pay it any time between the 1st and the 5th, you're A-OK. You don't owe any late fees. You can't get evicted. You're good to go. You're paid up on your rent.
All right, so what will happen if the landlord dies?
Okay, that's an excellent question. So if the landlord dies and the tenant has a few options, what I would tell them, if they want to stay in the property, what they need to do is continue to pay the rent as they have and keep records of it. Because if somebody else comes in, like a wife or a son or a daughter or something like that, well, they'll say, this person hasn't paid the rent. And you say, oh, ho, ho, here I mailed in and somebody has been cashing my rent checks here. And, you know, I have been making my rent payments. But you are still, even if the landlord dies, you don't get to live there for free, unfortunately. You have to keep paying those rents month after month. So, you all have asked excellent questions. That's kind of where we are leading up until our next episode, where we'll go through the court process. And unfortunately, I've had to evict quite a few of my people, and I'll give you some examples from where we've had to do some of that work and kind of some stories about what's gone on there. But that's where we are at this point.
All right. Well, up next on the next In Session, we will have more on the eviction process.
This has been In Session, a presentation of the Public Affairs Department of WKCS Radio. If you have any questions about today's show, they can be emailed to wkcs@notschools.org. or insessionradio@gmail.com. Tune in again next time on WKCS for more In Session.